welcome to the Peak Work Performance Summit, where we talk about scientifically proven ideas that make us smarter, healthier, and more productive. My name is Ron Friedman, and my guest today is sociologist Tracy Brower.
Tracy is the author of a fantastic book called Bring Work to Life by Bringing Life to Work.
In it, Tracy explains how any company can create a culture of abundance for their employees by empowering them to live richer lives both at work and at home. In the interview you're about to watch, Tracy offers some fantastic tips for persuading your manager to grant you more flexibility and explains why we're all more effective when we have some control over our schedules. She also shares some very clever suggestions for optimizing your home office to ensure that you're every bit as effective working off-site as you would be in the office. But first, Tracy and I began by talking about the limits of trying to achieve work-life balance. In her book, Tracy makes the case that we should stop trying to achieve balance and instead focus on trying to achieve integration. I asked her why. Here's what she had to say.
I think the first thing is that it's important to define integration. And I'm really defining integration in opposition to balance. So integration is really about understanding that you don't have to make all the trade-offs, understanding you can have it all, really thinking about the idea of abundance and fulfillment, and that work is a part of life and life is a part of work. But I think a really important thing here too is that we still get a boundary between work and life, and that we really need to be able to make a lot of our own choices about that. I've had the honor and privilege of talking to many, many people through my blog where I'm looking at work-life stories. And some people really prefer a more container orientation, separating work and life. And other people really prefer to blend the two. And neither of those are wrong, and all of those are sort of right answers depending on your own preferences and approach. I saw a great adage recently that said, everyone needs to spend at least 20 minutes outside every day, unless you don't have time, in which case you need an hour. So I thought that was great. You know, just the idea that it really is important to turn off and get away. And I think we really are at our best when we're able to do that. So setting a boundary is a really important thing. And that still falls for me within the idea of work-life integration. I think a lot of times technology has gotten in our way, all the new technologies that allow us to be on all the time. And I think we're in a bit of a learning curve as a society in terms of how to make sure that we're managing our technology versus the other way around. And I think that being able to kind of turn off, focus on family, focus on community, focus on things outside of work is really critical. The key for me is that we all do that really differently. So for some people, that ends up being a really strict boundary, and it has to do with that time of day. After, you know, 5:30 p.m., I'm going to put it away. That's great. Some people say, boy, I'd like to stop maybe a little bit earlier and go volunteer at the hospital one day a week and then turn back on a little bit later. So it truly is about kind of making our own choices and finding the balance and the blend that work for us.
How do you know if you're a really good work-life integrator versus just simply a workaholic?
Oh, that's such a good question and an important question. I think first of all, one idea is the idea of capacity, right? Our own capacity is malleable and it actually changes over time based on what else we're facing. So we can't really judge whether someone else is a workaholic. It probably needs to be something they judge for themselves. But I've always thought too about workaholism as a question of whether you're running away from something or running to something. So a lot of times workaholism is about running away. There's something that's not working. And so I'm running into work. I'm immersing myself in work as an escape from something else in an unhealthy way. That's really different than a situation where you're passionate about what you do, you're energized about what you do, and therefore you like to do it a lot. And I think the key is work-life integration, work-life abundance isn't just about any one of us. It's about our family. It's about our community. And so feedback is an important part of that as well. Like if my family comes to me frequently and says, oh my gosh, we never see you. You're always immersed in work. That's a really big red flag. On the other hand, if we feel good about what we're doing and those around us, our family, our friends, our community, are feeling like we're able to contribute, that's a really great cue about whether we're in a healthy sort of situation or not from a work-life standpoint. So getting feedback is important. And I think performance is also a cue. So if we're performing really well, that says that we've got performing really well in all areas, I should say, that gives us a real sense that we're able to kind of keep those in alignment. That's the key thing is are we able to spend time in the things that mean the most to us? So that alignment in priorities and purpose and time are really important in that workaholic kind of conundrum or assessment of whether we're doing too much.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. I really like the distinction between whether you're moving towards work versus running away from something else. You point out in your book that there's a very interesting relationship between how high we are up the corporate ladder and how much flexibility we have. And the relationship isn't necessarily what people would naturally assume. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting that multiple studies have shown this, and some of my own research did as well. And you're right, it's a bit counterintuitive. But what tends to happen as we move sort of higher in the corporate hierarchy, one thing that happens is we have a greater locus of responsibility, which typically means we have more projects, we have responsibility for more people, and a lot of times we have more travel. And those are the kinds of things that can cause us to need to be in a certain place more than working flexibly at home, as an example. Another interesting thing that happens as we sort of climb that corporate hierarchy is we tend to be more involved in more work that is more ambiguous, more strategic, more decision-making, things that are less tangible. And those tend to be the things that get done better face-to-face versus remotely, unless we've developed really, really strong relationships. Obviously, they can work well either way, but a lot of times, those are the kinds of things that cause us to have less control over our schedule, right? Paradoxically, we have less control over our schedule because we need to be in the office more. And I think the other thing that can happen is that sometimes we have an overinflated sense of how important it is that we be in the office. And so I've always, you know, heard and read that really great leaders actually can be away successfully because they're delegating, because they're empowering others. So I think as we climb the hierarchy, there are legitimate reasons for us to be in the office more and to have less flexibility, but we can push back on ourselves as well. And the other thing I think is fascinating about this is that leaders cannot not lead, and people look to them for cues all the time about the corporate culture, whether leaders think about that every day or not. So the choices that leaders make are really important in sending a message to the rest of the organization. So there's a great story that I actually share in my book as well. There's a CEO who's a grandfather, and he loves to go see his grandson play soccer once a week. And he was traditionally really keeping that under wraps. He didn't want people to know he was leaving for the soccer game until one day his assistant said to him, "You should let people know where you are." And so he started being more open about it. And it sent such a message to the culture. He was committed. He was getting his work done. He was engaged. But he took time to see his grandson play soccer once a week. And that transparency about where he was and what his priorities were was really important to the culture. So while our ability to be more flexible may shift over time, we also have the opportunity to make some really planful choices and choices that we can be very transparent about in helping to shape the culture.
So what often happens, as you're describing, is that when we enter a company, we just kind of assume that when we get to those higher echelons, we'll have a lot more flexibility. But in fact, it's kind of funny because after a certain point, so you reach a mid-level, and that's probably the peak of your flexibility. And then after a while, it actually tends to go down again. And so in many ways, these are skills that we need to be teaching people as they're ascending up the corporate ladder about how to get that flexibility. And as you argue, it's actually important in many cases to have flexibility in the way that you work, in the sense that it will improve your performance to have those options of when and where to work. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, flexibility really ends up driving performance and improving performance. And one of the things that I'm absolutely committed to and that all the research tends to support is that when we do the right thing for people, we get better organizational results. What's good for people is good for organizations. And it's not a trade-off. It's not a choice about do I do the right thing for people or do I do the right thing for the organization? And I think the way that works is, first of all, when companies allow flexibility, encourage flexibility, encourage alternative working, they're sending a message to people about the extent to which they trust people to make really good choices and decisions. And we, in our human condition, really are about reciprocity. So we can look at this at sort of instinctual levels. But in general, when people give to us, we tend to be motivated to give back. And so when organizations provide flexibility, it tends to foster this idea of reciprocity. People want to work hard. They want to do their best, period. And they want to do their best and work hard, especially when they have these options and choices. The other thing that flexibility does and how it's linked with performance is that it allows us to work when it's best for us, when it works into our lives, when it works into our schedules, but then also when it works in terms of our own focus. So some people may be most focused early in the morning and they're, you know, in a slump in the afternoon. And so if they can flex their work in order to allow for that, that works well. Or there may be someone who wants to take a class every, you know, Tuesday afternoon, for example, and then they're going to turn back on in the evening. The choices and the control that we give people and the flexibility they have allows them to focus on work at the times that work best for them. And when we can focus on work in the times that work best for us, we do a better job, we have better outcomes, and therefore serve our performance and the company's performance better. So it really works out for everyone, both the individuals and the organization and the team.
Mm-hmm. So now, as people are rising up that corporate ladder, do you have any recommendations about some ways in which they can more effectively integrate work with their personal life?
Yeah, it's a great question and super important. I think, first of all, integration is about creating abundance and fulfillment. So that's kind of the way that I'm defining the way that I think about answering this question. And I think it's about, first of all, knowing your priorities. And for some of us, that's about writing them down. For other people, it's just kind of knowing them deeply. But know your priorities. What's most important for you? And then think about where you're spending your time. Are your hours of the day really aligned with what your priorities are? And make sure that they are. And if they're not, change it and realize how much control you really have over some of those choices and decisions. I think another element is to build relationships. One of the things, we're fundamentally social beings, and work is a social outlet, as are lots of other social outlets. We release a neurotransmitter, oxytocin, when we feel a great connection with others. We release a neurotransmitter, serotonin, when we feel valued by a group, when we have a feeling of pride and recognition. The reason those are important is that we tend to want to repeat situations that have us releasing those feel-good chemicals and avoid situations that don't. And so I think building relationships, because that is fulfilling and creates a sense of abundance, is an important element of creating that integration. And we can do that through work, and that's a really great outlet for it. The other thing I would say is that leverage technology. So technology, when we manage it instead of it managing us, as we talked about earlier, can be a great enabler of integration. So what that looks like is that I can go to my daughter's violin recital and be able to just see what's happening at work if I want to, if I have chosen that that's an okay boundary for me, and then be able to anticipate work that I might need to turn back on for, or anticipate work the next day, or shoot a quick email back and take care of something so that I can stay focused in the moment. So with leveraging technology, kind of keeping the doors of communication open is also really important. And I think integration, is also about realizing that we have different needs for integration over the seasons of our life, over our life course. So from day to day, from week to week, even from season to season, whether it's the school season or not, if we happen to have children or be involved in children, all of those are ways to think about integrating and creating abundance, is to attend to those kinds of considerations.
So I'm interested in that phrase of creating abundance. So I can see that as being an element of a leadership decision or something that managers can do, but how do you create that that perspective in your life if you're constantly pressured to achieve more by your manager and you feel like you don't have time at home? I mean, it's a great thing to have once you have it, but what do you do if you're not in that place?
I think the first thing is that in order to drive toward this idea of integration or choice or abundance, and in order to have that kind of relationship with our manager where we can do that, we first need to have a great foundation of a relationship with our manager. So the first part is just build a great relationship with our manager. Then I think we can take some certain steps in order to get there. And the first is about performing brilliantly. Like, the research that I did for the book suggested that there was a lot more openness on the part of leaders when they were working with someone who was performing really, really well. So performance is a prerequisite for work-life choice, alternatives, flexibility, and all of that. So perform brilliantly. I think another thing is to really start small and be specific. So when you're asking your leader, hey, I'd like to have more flexibility or choice, you want to be specific about that. Just saying, I want more flexibility may feel a little scary to a leader. What does that mean? What will that turn into? But I think if we can start small, I'd like to take off, you know, the last Friday afternoon of every month, or I'd like to take a class once every Wednesday and come into work at 10 o'clock instead of at 8 o'clock. Or I'd like to stay home and work from home if my child is sick instead of also having to call in sick myself. Being really specific and starting small. And I think the other thing is that we want to think about how that benefits the business. Like, we frequently talk about the idea of what's in it for me, WIFM. And in this case, I think we also want to be clear about what's in it for the business. So how is the business going to benefit by you having more flexibility? And that is usually about being able to work and focus when it works for you and how it works for you, so you can fit it into the crevices, cracks, and points in your life. So that's a big one. I think another one is the idea of connecting to the team and the customer, making sure that the leader knows that the team is still going to be served, making sure the customer will still be served. Also, setting up communication protocols. So sometimes that looks like a time-bound period. Let's try this for 3 months and then check in and communicate and get feedback. And communication protocols day-to-day. So if I'm working in my home office or a third place or a fourth place, I'll use IM, or we can stay connected through email. Those seem like no-brainers, but usually leaders like to hear that we're staying connected. And so I think all of those work well in terms of starting the journey and agreeing that we're going to check in together and make sure it's working. And finally, just staying agile, learning what's working and what's not, and adjusting and course correcting as necessary. Those are the kinds of things that leaders will usually respond to when they hear a proposal.
I think you mentioned some really very interesting and useful tips there. So let me see if I can capture them all. Understand that your performance is a prerequisite before you go in there and start making demands. Two is to focus on starting small, so, and being specific, and not necessarily coming in and say, I'd like more flexibility, which can be intimidating to the leader, but saying, can we try, you know, working from home one day a week or something like that? And then being agile and being open to experiments and talking about all the ways you're going to stay connected with the team and the customers.
Yeah, exactly.
Really, really good stuff. So let's look at it from the other side. What if I'm a manager and I start having more of an appreciation, hopefully by watching this, about all the benefits of flexibility? What should I do first to introduce that without necessarily changing things completely for my team?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the first thing is to be a leader who focuses on results and objectives. Leaders, I think, who struggle most with flexibility are the leaders who are worried about kind of managing to the whites of people's eyes and worrying about if they're in their seats at certain times. And so being a leader who can manage to those results is a big deal. Are people getting done what they need to get done? Are you giving clear expectations and objectives and then asking people to pursue those and accomplish those in the way that works best for them? So that's A number one, is to be focused on performance and outcomes more than kind of presenteeism. And then I think the other thing is to ask questions and listen for answers. So one of the things that I really believe is there are multiple right answers to the way that we bring work to life, to the way that we integrate. And so different team members may have different needs. And so the more you can kind of, as a leader, ask questions, listen, and check in. Sometimes leaders are in a place where they can provide different kinds of solutions for different team members. That's the nature of the work or the nature of the team or the size of the team that might dictate that. And so if that's the case, then the more you can sort of customize team member by team member, the better. Other team leaders are in a situation where they may need one answer for the team because it's just really unwieldy to manage otherwise. And then I think a team conversation is a really good approach. We've seen that work in lots of different situations. That is where teams can come together and talk about their common goals, talk about their needs, and then really come to some team consensus. Like, I saw one team that adopted core hours. They agreed they were always going to be in the office from Tuesdays at 10 to Thursdays at 3. Everyone was going to be in the office in those core hours. And outside of those hours, people could flex whenever they wanted to. Another team I was just working with decided that they were all going to work from home on Thursdays. It was the entire marketing team. And they just really knew that if they had the heads down, contemplative time more frequently, they would be more productive. So as a team, they decided to do that. Teams can also establish, you know, maybe more technological supports, like they might all decide that they want laptops so that they can be away from the office, or they all get access to Skype, for example, so that they can Skype each other during the day. The point is that really great leadership responses have to do with listening to individuals and to the team and then coming up with solutions that will work. And then finally, I think that great team leader response is also about being flexible. So looking at how is it going, getting feedback about how it's going, and then being able to make shifts and adjustments as necessary.
I think that last point is so critical because in many cases, leaders get trapped into thinking we either get this right or we don't try it at all. And that can be paralyzing for a leader. And so having that perspective of we're going to try these different approaches for maybe a 3-month period and then talk to people on the team, see if it's working for them, and if not, make adjustments. That attitude of trying to get better rather than trying to get it perfect, I think can be really liberating.
Yeah, well said. Trying to get better versus trying to get perfect. Nice. Yes. And I think the other thing is that a lot of times we define work-life integration as flexibility or alternative work. And that's a really important way to define it. But we can also define this idea of abundance and fulfillment and integration through other things as well. So leaders who provide recognition, right? Or leaders who provide development opportunities, or leaders who understand what people's passions are and align them with projects in that area, or leaders who provide more choice or control for people about what they're working on. Those are all additional ways to provide for this idea of abundance and fulfillment, in addition to potentially providing for alternative working.
One thing before we wrap up that I think is really interesting is I'd hate to miss the opportunity to ask you about this. In your book, you talk about ways in which we can leverage our physical environment to make ourselves more productive in the office. And I'm curious about whether there are some tips you can offer for those of us who either work from home occasionally or full time. How do we create a better home office?
That's a really important one. So I think, you know, one of the really interesting things about work and some of the research that we've done has suggested that when there's more work in process around us, we tend to do better. So a lot of times working well in a home office is about having your own space. So I know a lot of times people work at the kitchen island or work at the table, which can be a little bit of a challenge because then you're cleaning up every night so the, you know, family can eat dinner or you can eat dinner. And so the more you can kind of have your own space, that's really helpful. Your own space where you can not only have work out, but also our memories are improved when we have a spatial recognition of where we were having the conversation with someone or where we had the thought or where we were when we were developing the such and such. And so having our own space is important. Another thing that's really important is having some daylight and views. And I know sometimes that's not possible. Sometimes people are in a, you know, lower level or they're in a small apartment with an interior wall. But the more we can have enough light, daylight views are best, but even just incandescent light is really helpful. I think the other thing is to really make it your own. So surround yourself with your own artifacts, books that mean a lot to you, or that fun gift that someone gave you. If you like soft music in the background that isn't distracting, or you know, burn a candle. There's a really great app called Coffitivity, and it actually plays coffee shop sounds, and you can choose morning, afternoon, or evening coffee shop sounds. So that's another thing I know sometimes people use because they like the buzz of a coffee shop, even if they're in their home office. And of course, keep the coffee flowing during the day. So have access to really good coffee when you're in your home office.
Tracy Brower, thank you so much for your time. This was fantastic.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.